It's recording. Wow.
All right, so we are adding one more component to the concept of whether or not training is cost beneficial to the organization. Because I said, if a person has reached the goal of hitting the trained number, the number they were supposed to, does that mean the training was successful? And you said, it depends, and it certainly does depend. Almost everything in life depends. And this happens to be another one. And if they transfer it over to the workplace, is it successful? Well, of course, that depends, too, on whether they hold their score at the high level of performance or whether they drop off. It could also mean, perhaps, that they take a job with somebody else now that they're well-trained, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody see that movie? King and I? No. All right. But in any case, what we have then is one more consideration, which is an extremely important consideration for any individual who considers themselves educated. And I love this concept, so I'm going to bang on it for quite some time. Here's what we got. We've got this person who's supposedly trained, and we're trying to determine whether there's cost-benefit to the company, which would mean the training costs less than the expected value that's gained from that employee. And, of course, as I point out, their performance could go down, would mean that probably their training wasn't appropriate. Or they could quit, which would mean even worse because our competitor might hire them and get all the value out of that training, etc. And there's another factor here, that we can't necessarily say that the training was the crucial aspect in behavioral change. Why is that, Dr. Fox? Because as I pointed out to you already, performance is made up of two components, which are ability and motivation here. And training is in large part, at least so far, we've been talking about it in terms of ability change. But we also have to think about it in terms of motivational change. How many of you looked at the Hawthorne study in the OB class? Do you remember? Do you remember? The Hawthorne study? Well, there was one that involved lighting. The other involved the Beach Boys. They were all from Hawthorne, California. So I think we're talking about the lighting. What happened?
The light had nothing to do with the production. The light, or increased the lighting, they were kind of clear out better than the lighting had
to be. And both lighting going up and lighting going down influenced their productivity up. And why was that? They were being paid attention to. Somebody was paying attention to them and writing down things about them on a clipboard. And they might have been wearing a white hard hat. That always means the supervisor, by the way. Any job you take, I would encourage you to wear a white hard hat. That means you're the boss. All right. So what we have here then is this Hawthorne consideration, where paying attention, I'll just put paying attention, P-A, right, to a person being trained will encourage them to work harder and change their level of performance. If you're watching them, writing things down, blah, 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 then there's a good chance that their motivation goes up because you're paying attention to them, and it's actually not the training that made the difference. Got it? Or during the training period, they read a notice on the bulletin board that said that the company was hurting and they were going to lay off 20% of the workforce, low performers. So the employee said, damn, I better get my act together, and started working really hard. They had their motivation changed. So the Hawthorne effect in this situation could discredit the influence that actual skill enhancement might have caused, and that's what we've been paying for. So then if we have this employee and we notice higher productivity here, productivity going up, we have training in the middle, and we see this change, right? How can we be sure that it's the ability enhancement rather than the motivational enhancement that caused this change? Pardon? I can't hear you. If they know that the company's looking to lay people off, that could last a long time. So that wasn't what I'm getting at. There's some way to take into consideration the impact of training versus motivation. In other words, ability and motivation.
Remove the motivated.
You're getting very good at that. So far, so good. How would you do that? Okay, but that, do it in a little bit more sophisticated fashion. Think about the idea of simultaneous. Do you remember simultaneous linear equations where you have two equations and you put one on top of the other and subtract something out? Do you remember that?
No.
It was maybe sixth grade or so.
You have two sets of equations and you can subtract out one variable and leave the other one by itself.
Does that give you a hint?
The balance nut, you have to move to the other side.
Pardon?
The balance nut, you have to move that variable to
It's not the other side. If this training here is also motivation, because you're paying attention to a person being trained, right? You're watching them and this and that. How am I going to get rid of the motivation?
You need a control group.
Thank you. You need a control group. And that control group, which is right here, right, would have only, it begins with an M, applied to it. Right. So here we're only going to motivate. Now, why do you give two hoots about this discussion that Fox seems to be so fired up about? Almost up to the level, no, up to the level of a quarter of my granddaughter. That's pretty high in my book. Why is this so exciting? Because this demonstrates the difference between a person off the street and a person who's been educated in my class, if not any other class. Because what we're looking at here is the ability to untie a situation and make it clear. Always a good thing. It's a problem-solving skill. And I encourage you to think about these things. If
here we see training and motivation, we want to get rid of motivation.
So we would have this control group. A control group, indeed. And how's it work, Alice?
What we have here is, let's say it's 10 employees. Their average scores, they come into this, might be 20 widgets per hour. Right, and over here it's whatever, 30 widgets per hour after the training,
which of course involves skill enhancement as well as motivation.
How are we getting rid of it now? How are we going to get rid of the motivation component using the control group?
Come on, kids. Don't pretend you don't know. You can work this out. How do we get rid of the motivation with this control group? This control group starts off at, let's say, it doesn't matter, 18.
Can you give them the motivation and see how much they have at the end?
Yes, indeed. I pay attention to them. I compliment them on the 170 pictures that they carry on their cell phone of their granddaughter. And what a beautiful child she is. And she must be a freaking genius to move into your family, Dr. Fox, et cetera, et cetera. So we pay lots of attention to these people. And we show them videos of how wonderful the company has been, and our old bearded grandfather who founded the company all these years ago as part of a crew of robber barons that came in and screwed over everybody but kept all the money for themselves and got this company going, et cetera, et cetera. The history of our fine, fine organization. And after chewing on that for a while, we measure them, and they're now at 26. So, what do we got here? The picture's a lot less impressive now vis-a-vis the influence of the ability change, right? The training part of this looks a lot less impressive now, because we really didn't have to do too much with the motivation control group. We plunk them down into chairs, give them the same kind of meals and vacation time or whatever, pay them, et cetera, whatever we're doing with the training group, and we see that they've moved up a total of, we don't need to take our shoes off for this, moved up a what? 8 widgets per hour, as opposed to the 10 widgets per hour over here. So we have 10 widgets per hour gain, and here we have 8 widgets per hour gain. Meaning that the training itself, the skill enhancement part of the training, was worth 2. Okay, see, we could do that on 10 fingers. It worked out perfectly. 2. Right there. So now the question is that training really worthwhile? Sort of depends. If they're making Hatteras yachts, it might be. If they're making Dixie cups, probably not. So we need to think about the cost-benefit in terms of a pure monetary gain minus the cost of the change function, whatever it was. So what we're looking at here then is with a non-equivalent control group is to parse out the components of change to training and motivation, subtract out the motivation using this control group and what's known as pseudo-training here. The idea that the company's so wonderful and they're wonderful and et cetera, et cetera. Why is this important? Do you think you're going to be involved in human resources training and that you're never going to use this? Whatever. It's not that at all. That's not the reason that this is important. The reason this is important is it allows you to break down any change factor to see whether it's cost beneficial. Talk about, I don't want to get too involved with this. Talk about an advertising campaign. And in the advertising campaign, you're going to have you're going to have a pop star selling Pepsi-Cola, and not. Does the popular singer, Michael Jackson, as it happens to be in my mind, setting his hair on fire while playing with a bottle of Pepsi-Cola? Do you remember this happening? No, we're too young, Dr. Fox. We don't remember. Well, he did, which I thought was rather brazen of him to catch attention. But in any case, he set his hair on fire while selling Coke or Pepsi, right? Like a mix-up with what was in the Pepsi, and it turned out they handed him a bottle of gasoline.
I thought it was like pyrotechnics.
The rocket set his hair on fire as they blew up off the top of his head. They were shooting up in the air, and his hair caught on fire.
No,
it's cross, maybe? Yes. Whatever. In any case, is it worthwhile to have a celebrity selling the soda? How would you find out? Did I say something to offend her? She's a Michael Jackson fan. Is it worthwhile to have Michael selling Pepsi? How would I do? How would I find out?
Sales.
Pardon?
Sales.
Well, figuring that I'm talking about this situation, you'd want to have a control group. Who would be the control group? Right, who were not exposed to Michael Jackson, but instead got just some old schmo college professor who wanted to pick up an extra $10 because he had to buy pencils for all his starving students. All right, so that's what they did. And the question was, did the sales go up enough in the Michael Jackson ad to warrant the money that Mike got for this? I'm making this up as I go along, so I have no idea. But let's say this is the grand old U.S. of A. I've already gone through this, haven't I? I've already gone through that with you. All right. And we have La La Land here, Nine Island here, and we decide that we're going to use West Coast to minimize exposure. None there. So we put Mike here. We have no Mike here. And we watch how sales change during the mic exposure, non-exposure period of time. Okay. And is it worth it or not? So what we're looking at here with the control group is getting rid of pollutants to the experimental design. It's extremely important that you can think of it this way when you're implementing change at the organization. Hey! We're thinking about trying this new benefit, right? Is it worthwhile? Is it going to attract good people or not, right? So we, in one plant, we try having this new benefit, and we tell all the applicants about it, blah, blah, and we look at the higher percentage, number of people came in out of whom we took people, and we compare that to the plant that doesn't offer this. You get my point. So you can use this concept in every change that you're thinking about making. It's a good thing to do. I always wondered about from the point of view of whether or not the university or our department or any department, really does it pay off when the candidate that we're thinking about hiring comes, we bring in usually three or four people and pick one, does it make any difference where we take them to dinner or lunch? I mean, we spend a lot of money sometimes taking them to nice dinner. They took me to the farmhouse when I came here. I don't know if you even remember it. But it was a pretty nice little restaurant. We had wine. Bob Goddard and I got comfortable. And it was fun. But we spent a shipload of money, probably over $200. It was a lot of fun, though. Now, the question is, did I make a mistake when I took a candidate to Earth Fair for lunch? Hey, it's where I wanted to go. I figured it would show we're down to earth and good people. But in any case, does it make a difference? That's spending money. Somebody should do some sort of experimental design. Does it change the outcome by how much money we spend on a person's candidacy dinner or lunch, as the case may be? So here what we're looking at here is to get a handle on whether or not it's motivation or whether or not it's the actual ability enhancement that seems to make a difference. Does everybody have a handle on this, how this works? Good, because it's really the mark of an intelligent, educated at least person. It has a name, of course, which I had you write down in your notes already. Non-equivalent control group design. Non-equivalent control group design. Please note that there are five words, therefore five initials. You can imagine in my somewhat twisted brain rearranging these letters and putting them on a test somehow, right? So you should always use the NCEGD to determine whether or not your training had an influence. What are you going to put? I'm saying it's written on the test, the NCEGD. Thank you. You know that I would do this to you. So please, please, please be careful. Learn what this is, learn what it means, and then use it. I have my friend James Wimbush, now dean of one of the parts of the business school at Indiana Bloomington. He's gone right to the top. He and I finished up at Tech pretty much at the same time. I've stayed here, and he's taken on all that gut-wrenching responsibility of being a dean. Anyway, he went to work for Dow chemical during one sort of summer internship and spent a whole period of time working on some kind of change program and then had to present it to the corporate leadership. And he talked to me about it first, and I said, you're going to talk about the non-equivalent control group, and he said, good idea. I'll take credit for that. So a couple days later, he called me back and said, how'd it go? He said, well, they only had one question when it was over. And I said, what did they say? What did they ask you? He said, would you start working for us tomorrow? So it worked. See, made a good impression. So my point is here, these are not things that the average schmo from lesser business schools know about, or even better business schools would know to bring that in necessarily to a change process. But you now know about it, and I expect you to be sure to digest this and then use it. All right, so training then, the training that we put in place obviously is going to be an important component of how well the company is successful on into the future. Have to have well-trained employees who have been trained in an efficient and effective fashion, right? We haven't spent too much, we haven't spent too little, and we've surrounded these trained employees with an environment that encourages them to stay with us rather than springboard their newly acquired talents to some organization where they're better appreciated, where their boss isn't a jerk, right, et cetera, et cetera. So I encourage you to absorb all this stuff and make sure that the training does pay off. Next time we're here, we're going to talk about performance appraisal. And so that's it for today. Performance appraisal on Tuesday, on Thursday. Yeah.